Intervju Radija Student.
Cenijo poslušalstvo, poslušate intervju aktualno politične redakcije Radija Student. Pogovor z Bernhardom Weidingerjem, raziskovalcem javnega dokumentacijskega centra avstrijskega upora, smo posneli konec avgusta. Ob izbruhu množičnih desničarskih protestov v vzhodno-nemškem mestu Chemnitz, ki jih je sprožila smrt nemškega državljana v pretepu, zaradi česar so bili pridržani 4 migranti. Odmevi teh protestov tudi več tednom potem burijo duhove v Nemčiji in krhajo že tako šibko veliko koalicijo. Za razliko od Nemčije v Avstriji podobnih prizorov uličnih demonstracij niso vajeni. Za razliko od Avstrije pa v Nemčiji do zadnjih volitev niso bili vajeni skrajne desnice v poslanskih klopeh. Ta je v avstrijskem parlamentu stalnica, v trenutni vladi pa igrajo vlogo koalicijskega partnerja. Svobodnjaška stranka pod vodstvom Heinz Christiana Stracheja je na volitvah pred slabim letom osvojila 51 sedežev v 183 članskem parlamentu in z ljudsko stranko Sebastiana Kurca sklenila koalicijo. S tem izidom so se svobodnjaki krepko približali najboljšim rezultatom iz časov predsednika stranke Jürga Haiderja. Bernhard Weidinger jasno postavlja svobodnjake na skrajno desnico političnega zemljevida. Intervju smo pričeli s tem od dneva in aktualnim vprašanjem skrajne desnice na ulicah ter skrajne desnice v parlamentih Avstrije in pa Nemčije.
The right has a very strong parliamentary representation since basically 1990 when the Freedom Party was led by Jörg Haider. And so there simply has been no need for extra parliamentary far-right activism. While in Germany, as you said, now we have the Alternative for Deutschland, but for many years in Germany, the far-right was very weak in terms of electoral success. And that is an important reason that far-right activism on the streets, extra-parliamentary far-right activism, including violent activism, has been more widespread in Germany than it has been in Austria.
If we could go back to, as you said, the far-right, the Freedom Party, was already big in the 90s. It actually got into government in the late 90s and early 2000s. By now, we've all grown accustomed to the far right being a major player in European politics in Europe in 2018. But what's so specific about Austria that a party like such was able to gain so many votes in the 90s?
Well, there's certainly a number of factors to consider, but one specificity for Austria is certainly the heritage of the Nazi past, which was dealt with in a very different way as compared to Germany. Germany after 1945 had no other option than basically integrating the Nazi past in its historical narrative and defining the Federal Republic as the antithesis to Nazism. But in Austria after 1945 presented itself as the first victim of Nazism and therefore didn't really accept historical responsibility for decades. So there was no re-education like we had in Germany. There was much less activity in terms of, you know, coming to terms with the Nazi past. And so also until today, for example, the threshold for far-right scandals or for remarks or actions to be considered as scandals, this threshold is much higher in Austria. So in Austria, or let's say in Germany, as a politician, you'd have to step down for remarks that aren't even considered as scandalous in Austria until today. So we have very important differences here in terms of political culture. And I think that that is an important factor, and that goes a long way towards explaining why the far right has been so successful in Austria. But of course, there are other factors too, like, for example, this model of government, the grand coalition between social democrats and conservatives that has governed Austria for decades. This is a model that has gone into crisis, that is perceived by major parts of the population as a model that doesn't get anything accomplished. This perception is widespread that these two grand parties in the last couple governments that they formed together were getting nothing done, were always simply fighting. And also we have to see that in terms of racist attitudes, that of course prepared a ground for far-right electoral success. These attitudes, also authoritarianism, are pretty much widespread in Austria.
So if you go back to 1999, when it wasn't the first time, if I'm not mistaken, but it was the time when the Freedom Party was in government and it actually got the biggest number of votes, also these elections included. Could we go back to that year? There were massive street protests, and Brussels was threatening with sanctions, if I remember correctly, to avoid European government with a man like Jörg Haider playing a big role in it. Can you explain how has Austria and the Freedom Party itself changed since 1999 and 2018, when this time around there were no massive street protests and Brussels didn't even flinch?
It's certainly correct that reactions to the building of this government have been very different than back in 2000. And I would say that this has really nothing to do with the evolution of the Freedom Party and everything to do with the evolution of Austrian politics, in particular, and European politics in general. So on a European level, back then, the EU found that it was time, you know, to take a stance to prevent Austria from setting a precedent for other governments, including far-right parties, to follow suit. And also on the level of Austrian politics, in Austrian society back then, the inclusion of the Freedom Party in the federal government was considered as a major, you know, as a taboo breaker. But now, 18 years later, you know, we have seen similar governments in other European countries. We have seen far-right parties rise, if not to government, so at least to very big numbers in many countries. We have a President Trump in the U.S. We now have Matteo Salvini as the interior minister of Italy. It would certainly be considered as hypocritical if the EU was to take action on Austria while not taking action on other countries with similar governments, like Hungary, for example. And in Austrian society, the Freedom Party, when they entered government in 2000, they pretty soon went into crisis mode. There was a lot of infighting, and basically they auto-destroyed. And they suffered a big crisis. They plummeted in the polls and then also in elections. And then there was the party split of 2005. But since then, when Heinz-Christian Strache, the current party chairman, took over the party in 2005, when the numbers were at the lowest, since then the party has risen in the polls and has had election success after election success. And so over these last 10 or 15 years, people have pretty much grown accustomed to the idea that sooner rather than later, the Freedom Party would be part of the government again. And so this time around, it wasn't considered as breaking a taboo. It was considered as something that had to happen, something that we knew would happen. And so reactions also here in Austria and Austrian society were much, much calmer than in 2000. There were some demonstrations, but not as frequently and not drawing the same kind of crowds as back in 2000. People, what has happened now this last autumn is simply what people have grown to expect.
Reading through your work, the thing I found fascinating and really interesting, looking from an outsider's perspective, is the role of the student fraternities that you mentioned. Could you talk a bit about that? And you already mentioned the phrase, but could you expand a bit on it, German nationalism? So what does this entail? What does this mean in Austria, German nationalism versus Austrian nationalism?
No, the more traditional sectors of the far right in Austria, including the Freedom Party, still see Austria as a part of the German nation, the Austrian people as a part of the German people. That's in the Freedom Party platform, actually. They say Austria, the Austrian people are a part of the German Volksgemeinschaft. You know, it's actually a Nazi term, but they still use it. The community of the German people. And this is something that really doesn't resonate well with a broader public in Austria. This is so that the vast majority of Austrians today perceive themselves as Austrians and as Austria being an independent nation. The standard bearers of German nationalism in Austria are these student fraternities that have historically always played an important role in the Freedom Party. So the Freedom Party has, over the course of its history, has always recruited particularly higher-ranking officials from the ranks of these student fraternities. And so they are present at every level of the party. Also, since this government was formed, a lot of student fraternity members have assumed new positions in administration, in the cabinets of ministers, in enterprises that are owned by the state of Austria or partly owned by the Republic. They are, you could say, the academic backbone of the party. And so the party has always had, or the party leadership has always had to, try and... They've always had to take the reactions from this German nationalist scene into account. For example, like Strachin, now that he's the vice chancellor, it would be comfortable for him to be able and distance himself from German nationalism because it would reduce the hostility from international media and from critics and from Austrian critics alike, but he simply can't do that because that would steer rebellion from the party base. This is certainly a problem that the Freedom Party, whenever it enters federal government, is facing.
So that's the academic backbone. In your work, you also mentioned their relationships with, for lack of a better term, street movements or internet movements, I guess, at this point, such as the Génération Identitaire that started in France but has since spread throughout Europe. and Pegida, I guess, also fits into this narrative. Could you explain a bit the relation between the parliamentarian far right and the street or internet far right?
I think you can say that the Freedom Party in Austria is like the central point of reference for the entire far right. So be it the identitarians, be it even neo-Nazi circles. I mean, among actual neo-Nazis, there's a lot of people who find that the Freedom Party is already, you know, one of the stakeholders of the system and can no longer be trusted. But other than that, the entire Austrian far right in some way orbits around the Austrian Freedom Party. And that includes the identitarians. I mean, we have a number of examples of people who have been active there and then become members or officials of the party or been active in a party in some capacity. And also other examples where it was the other way around. Only it looks as though the party doesn't really want people to be active in both ambits simultaneously. So you'd have to make a choice. Either you're protesting on the streets with the identitarians, or you assume a position within the Freedom Party. They don't want it. They don't want you to do it simultaneously. I mean, there's really not a lot of ideological. There's not a big ideological gap between the two. The policies are pretty much very, very much alike. But you know, it simply doesn't look good if you have people as activists on the street and in the party at the same time.
So in Slovenia, we remember the Freedom Party of the late 90s, of the early 2000s, Jörg Haider's Freedom Party, which fought against bilingual signs in the Kärnten region, which had problems with Slovenians and I'm guessing also people from other ex-Yugoslav states. But since it appears that the FPÖ has move the goalposts. Now they seem to have no issue with Slovenians, Croats. They are even looking for electoral success amongst the, let's say, local Serbian population, and have rather focused on the fear-mongering, if I may use that term, against the people from the Middle East, well, against Muslims.
Yeah, I would say it's correct that the anti-Muslim racism has become a major propaganda tool or a major area of Freedom Party propaganda since, I would say, 2005 or so, when Strache took over. And that has probably pushed other images of the enemy a little bit to the background. So, I mean, the Freedom Party, as I say, has been actively courting the Serbian origin voters in Austria. I would say that this is rather a strategical approach because they realize that you cannot become the number one party in Austria if you alienate like the entire migrant population. So they chose the Serbians because, on one hand, it's a very big group. It's the second biggest group after people of German origin in Austria. And on the other hand, because they say, well, they're culturally very close to us. They're Christians, you know, like also Croats. They're Christians, so they are both able and willing to assimilate. But at the same time, the Freedom Party presents people of Turkish descent as unable and unwilling to assimilate for the different cultural background.
If we ask the Austrian politicians on the right, if we ask Strache or Kurz, are they Christian? What will they answer to that? And does that play a role in Austrian politics, religion, and the Roman Catholic Church itself?
Well, the People's Party has always been closely affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church. Also, I would say this relationship has been tighter in the past than it is right now. As for the Freedom Party, they had a very conflictuous relationship with the Roman Catholic Church historically, because the so-called third camp of Austrian politics, you know, we would have the Social Democratic camp, the Conservative camp, and then the German Nationalist third camp, somewhat liberal too. They had a very conflictuous relationship with the Roman Catholic Church. They were basically anti-clerical since the late 19th century. And so this has only changed in the last couple of decades. And nowadays, you know, with this whole topic of Islam becoming more important, also the relationship between the party and Christianity has changed. Nowadays, the party presents itself as at least, you know, culturally Christian. They frame Austria, they frame Europe as a space that is that has been deeply impregnated by Christianity for hundreds of years, and Freedom Party politicians, if you ask them, will often tell you that they consider themselves as Christians in a cultural sense, you know, not so much in a strictly religious sense, but they will say that, well, culturally, Europe has been shaped by Christianity, and therefore it is important if we want to defend our heritage, we want to defend our culture, we also have to defend this country being Christian. That is why, like 20 or 30 years ago, the Freedom Party was opposed to the public display of crucifixes in classrooms, for example, and now they support it, you know, because they say, well, we are in favor of the separation of church and state, but the crucifix in the classroom is a sign of, you know, the cultural fabric of Europe.
Bernhard, thanks so much for your time and your answers. Have a nice day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye, nice meeting you.
Z Berhardom Weidingerjem, raziskovalcem z dokumentacijskega centra avstrijskega upora, se je pogovarjal Anton.
Intervju Radija Študent.